Hello and welcome to Weekly MTG to all of you and to me.
Yeah, and Blake is back.
I'm back. I was gone for a month because we just had a kid.
Yeah, congratulations,
thank
by the
you.
Way,
thank
if
you.
I haven't said it.
His name is Jace.
Yes.
We did that on purpose. But yeah, he's doing great. Mom's doing great.
And clearly you're doing great too because you're
I'm
back.
Doing okay. I have. You'll notice for the first time I have coffee at this show because, you know, babies.
Yeah, that's what happens when you don't get very much sleep.
Yeah, you drink lots and lots of coffee.
As much as I'm sure everybody was here to see and hear Blake's
updates. You're not at all
Blake's
here
updates.
To hear about my child.
We're very excited today because we have a very special show. We have a very special guest.
We do.
But before we get to our very special guest, should tell people why he's going to be on the show. For those of you that don't know, we had a very cool installment of Magic Story come out yesterday. Children of the Nameless. It's a new Magic novella available for download by none other than Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah.
Beloved fantasy author, award-winning fantasy author, mm-hmm. Brandon Sanderson. It is available for free right now as an EPUB or PDF on mtgstory.com. So if
yep.
you go to mtgstory.com right now, download it. It is Brandon Sanderson's first ever Magic novella. It introduces a new planeswalker. It takes place on Innistrad, another fan-favorite plane.
Mm-hmm.
And... although we'll be interviewing Brandon for the bulk of the show, we are taking audience questions today, and we have some of our moderators standing by to route them to us. So
yep.
please
put
your questions,
chat.
Put them in chat.
We'll answer them
if we
some
can.
Some of them,
yeah, not all of them, but please put your questions in chat. We'd
for
love
Brandon.
To.
I don't ask us questions.
No, don't ask Blake questions.
We'll be back later.
But yes, we have, as a special guest on the show today, none other than the man himself, Brandon Sanderson, who is standing by live via satellite, which is a fancy way of saying we called him on Skype. So
I feel like I should be applauding.
I know. Right? Brandon, can you hear
Welcome.
Us?
Welcome.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Can, yeah.
Thank you so much for being here today.
It is my pleasure. I'm really excited.
So you are a long-time Magic fan, long-time Magic fan, and you've spoken with a number of outlets already about Children of the Nameless and about Magic, and I think it was in Daily MTG that you mentioned your favorite, you mentioned that Royal Assassin was one of your first ever rare cards.
It was my first.
And that Dimir is your guild of choice. How much of your color preference in that sort of blue-black control range went into your creation of Davriel, the main character of Children of the Nameless?
So I have this sort of streak in me that always likes to talk about the bad guys and talk about how they're not so bad. I'm a proud Slytherin, for instance. I think there are some very noble qualities to Slytherin. And so one thing I always like when Magic stories come along or when the black-aligned character is the hero, because it's just you don't see it as often. Granted, Magic has done it before. Mm-hmm. Umezawa... right, was a black-aligned hero and
yep.
things like that. And that's one of my favorite stories in Magic. And so it was like 5 or 6 years ago. When was it? It was when Return to Ravnica was new. Because I got given a bunch of packs of that, and I drafted Gate Crash with some people at Wizards. They mentioned, hey, we're doing some new story initiatives if you were ever interested. And that kind of just stuck in the back of my head. And I thought, what would I do if I were to write a Magic story? And I thought, well, I would need to write a Dimir hero, right? That's just how it would have
Obviously.
To be.
Yeah, totally.
And so over the years, that just kind of stuck in my head. And this character started to grow out of that to when earlier this year, Nick came to me and said, hey, do you really want to do this? And I said, yeah, I really want to do this. And I've got a story already.
Whoa. Nice. All right. So ready made.
Yeah. Well, I like what you said about making black aligned characters heroes. I really enjoyed the way you wrote kind of the crew around Davriel, his demons that were sort of bound to him by contracts. Where did those voices for those characters come from?
I often, when I'm building a character, am looking at how they're going to play off their environment.
Mm-hmm.
You really need, particularly to avoid long monologues about what a character's philosophy is on life, you need people for them to play against, right? For them to bounce off of. People that both align with them and don't. And key to developing Davriel was this kind of cohort of demons to show how his specific philosophy on life was different from other people who might also be, you know, black aligned or villainous characters but also in the places where they did align and things like this. And one thing that I also wanted to show is that, you know, a character who is on the quote unquote bad guys team, you know, we in fiction, we like to make people who are quote unquote evil just kind of all around despicable. But I don't think that's very realistic. Having a few attributes that might make you the antagonist doesn't mean you don't have good relationships in other settings and situations. And one of the things I wanted to deal with was a relationship between between Davriel and a demon, Miss Highwater. This is actually an idea of mine that goes back to my college years. I had an idea for a story of someone who summoned a demon using a classic demonic contract, but then used the demon for something mundane like housekeeping or something like that.
Yeah.
Which that contrast just always amused me. I never found a place for it until I started developing Davriel. I'm like, hey, if I made him a diabolist, if he's a demon expert, and he's using these demons in ways that most people would not, that sounded really fun and interesting and could lead to some really interesting character dynamics between him and his crew. So that is where I went. And I had Miss Highwater kind of planned from the beginning. The rest of the demonic crew came out in outlining and in writing the story.
Okay. So you created all these new characters, but you were working with a setting that already existed. And most of the time, you do a lot of the world building on your own. What was it like playing in a sandbox that wasn't exactly of your own creation?
You know, I was a little nervous at first because I thought, am I just going to get this all wrong? Am I going to ruin this? Is it going to go to the continuity editors and just come back with all sorts of, man, you just can't do any of this? So I submitted an outline ahead of time that kind of laid out a number of the things I was trying to do. And turns out, you know, having played Innistrad quite a bit, I have an Innistrad set cube. I've loved both of the blocks that were on Innistrad. And knowing enough about the lore, plus being given kind of the world books in-house, I didn't get very much wrong. So I was very relieved to get back that outline with, you know, you can do this, this, and this. These all work. Be careful on this. Say it like this on this one and things like that. But Magic does a really good job of evoking its setting with the cards. I think we as players take for granted how good a job that the creative team does with that. But I found just having the cards was enough, right? Reading the flavor text, knowing the setting, having played it, I had it all there, and I was really pleased with that. I was worried, like I said, but they do a really good job evoking setting through very little text, which is something that I don't do a lot, right? I use lots of text. So
we all have our own mediums.
It's true.
I appreciate their brevity.
Well, I think it's really cool that you are yourself a player of Magic. I mean, I think we were talking a little bit before this. I think it was Trick Jarrett mentioned to Blake that you have a Commander Cube, actually.
I do. I just built that. I love building cubes. It kind of scratches that game designer itch that I think a lot of us players have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not skilled enough at game design to design my own game, but I can take a pool of cards and say, what if we did this? And so this year, one of my big projects was a Commander Cube because I love to draft, and a lot of my play group loves Commander. And so I have a powered cube, which we draft quite a bit, but I wanted something else that I could take to conventions that'd be a little more noob-friendly, mm-hmm. right? When you break out the powered cube, it makes people's heads spin when people are playing Storm or somebody else is doing Pox or something like this, and it just... You don't play normal games of Magic in cube very often. So I wanted to build something that kind of walked the line between more of a modern cube, but also had Commander elements. And so I built a cube that's one-third legendary creatures and has a lot of graveyard support. Those are kind of my two themes for it. And we're slowly tweaking this, but the idea is you have to draft a commander and play that commander's color identity, and you draft a 60-card deck. We do three packs of 21 right now. Command damage. There you go. That's our theme. It's a lot of fun. It's working really well. I've had to do some tweaks to give people like certain equivalent of emblems that lets you kind of put color identities, like you draft an emblem that says you can add green cards to your deck regardless of your commander's color identity.
Sure.
That works really well because it allows you to pick a monocolored commander, build around them. If you don't get quite enough cards for it, you can pick up one of these things in the draft, and then that emblem lets you just make a Simic deck with a mono green commander. Mm-hmm. And that's worked cool. really well. That was my biggest worry with the cube, was that you just wouldn't be able to get enough cards in your color if you went monocolor.
So you've listed off a Commander cube, an Innistrad cube, and
a Power cube.
How many cubes do you have?
So my two main cubes are the Power cube and the Commander cube now.
Uh-huh.
My favorite sets, we usually draft it enough that I just have enough cards sitting around that if I take the extras to a convention and say, hey, I have doubles of these. Anyone want to trade me? I can usually end up with one of each mythic and two of each rare to build
sure.
a set cube out of it.
Nice.
So I have an Innistrad set cube. I have a Rise of the Eldrazi set cube. I have a Shards of Alara set cube. And I just am finishing off a Khaunts of Tarkir set
nice.
Cube. So.
Yeah, I did the same thing with the original Modern Masters. I made a cube out of that.
That's a really good one to choose because it's kind of like a little bit like Powered Cube, but
right.
not quite.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love me some Shards of Alara. I do love me some Shards of Alara.
Oh man,
I
cube.
Would cube that. Yeah.
Love that set. So you have an Innistrad cube. You have a lot of other cubes that represent sets. Clearly Innistrad, one of your favorite planes. You set the story there. It makes a lot of sense. Do the other cubes that you've built sort of represent some of your other favorite settings in addition to them being your favorite sets?
Yeah, they do. I mean, I love, because I'm a well-established and entrenched Magic player, I tend to really like the sets that make me think differently about Magic. The first time this happened, I don't have a cube of this yet, so I don't have enough of the cards, was in the Odyssey block, actually. And I know a lot of people, Odyssey was a little head-scratching to them, right? Because the mechanics were different, things with Madness and Threshold, and all the creature types were different. And I just loved that set because right about that time, I'd been feeling that Magic was getting a little stale for me. And then the set came out that completely changed the way that I played Magic.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. When I visited Wizards long time ago, like I said, during Gate Crash, I mentioned this to Mark Rosewater, and he actually went and dug out a playtest card from Odyssey for me, which is a prize of my collection. It was actually accumulated knowledge, which wasn't in Odyssey, but it had been tested in Odyssey because of the graveyard thing. And so in my Powered Cube, you can actually draft a 4-pack of accumulated knowledge that it comes with 4 copies, and one of them is the playtest card that Mark gave me.
Oh, that's so great. That's awesome.
So that was a big deal for me. And of course, Rise of Eldrazi was another one. This happens with a lot of entrenched players. The fact that it played so differently, mm-hmm. that it drafted so differently, that it kind of turned a lot of things on its head, and was a really, really great draft environment. I love Alara Block, I think, is one of my favorite flavor-wise settings. I loved the idea of the planes where you were missing 2 colors of magic on each one, the shards, the pieces of planes.
Mm-hmm.
The story and lore of that was fascinating to me, and I still just love that concept, and the 5 worlds that they built that would rise out of it. It's sort of world building I really like when you change something dramatic. Stormlight Archive came from me saying, hey, what if massive hurricanes blasted the planet every couple of days? How would life evolve around that?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Alara Block does that with magic, right? It's like, how would life on these planes evolve if there weren't any green magic? Which I just love that.
Cool. Let's go back to the story that you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
We could talk about magic all day.
Yeah, and we will at some point, I'm sure. Yeah.
But Davriel, is going to get the headline. He's on the cover, all that jazz. Everyone's going to talk about him. But Tassenda plays basically just as big a role in the story. Where did that character come from?
So as I was developing the story, in the years before I even asked to write it, one thing that occurred to me came to me quite clearly was that I could not center the story entirely around Davriel, because he is a person that is in many ways transcending the setting, right? He's not from Innistrad. He matches well to Innistrad, but to him, Innistrad is just another place. Mm-hmm. And the lore and story of Innistrad is about how it is to live in this dark place, right? Where humans are kind of are regarded as food by a lot of the environment. And what that does to the people living there, and what life is like. And I knew that I needed someone closer to the setting to also, you know, co-star in it, because otherwise it would just feel like the tourist on vacation. The stakes would not be high enough. And the story wouldn't feel Innistrad enough to me if it were just somebody from off plane taking a tour of it.
Right.
And so I started developing Tassenda. Actually started as a little bit more like her sister, as someone who was hunting out Davriel to kill him, as kind of a monster hunter type person, a Cathar, an Inquisitor, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the opening scenes I planned were this woman, older woman, you know, in her 20s or 30s, who was coming to bring down this lord that all the stories were about. And that eventually didn't work, because again, the stakes weren't personal enough. I had to back her up and put her from a village, make her younger, to fit this story as it was developing. And so we still have echoes of that, where Davriel's complaining about all the people who come and try to hunt him down. But Tassenda, I needed to be really close to the story and the conflict so that we had that heart for the story. Because if you're going to do a mono black character, or a black blue character as your protagonist, you might want to look somewhere else for the heart of the story.
That seems like a pretty reasonable assumption to me. I think Tassenda really struck a chord, no pun intended, with the audience. But is that a character that you think you might want to come back to someday? A character that you hope will show up again?
Yeah, I've definitely left some unresolved issues with both her and Davriel. So I would look forward to another chance. I don't know when I would be able to find the time, but I don't think this story is 100% done. And so we'll see.
All right.
Yeah.
Now apparently we're going back to talking about magic again.
I do like magic. Yeah. We all like magic here.
Do you have any favorite moments from magic's lore that really stuck with you?
So I was following the whole Weatherlight saga when it was happening. It's on the card, right? What's the name of it? Black, white, Vindicate. Right? I think it's on Vindicate, right? Kind of the climactic crux moment of the Weatherlight saga was really cool for me. Recently, I really liked how Shadows over Innistrad played out, how that went at the end with the moon and everything. I love Lovecraft, and I felt that the blend of cosmic horror and gothic horror worked really well in that. And then the kind of final, it was a new way to do the Eldrazi. I really, I liked that moment quite a bit. Mm-hmm. All the Dominaria stories, Martha Wells wrote those, I believe.
Yep.
A lot of them were really kind of smaller and personal, stuff with Slimefoot and things like that. She just did a really good job of making all the side characters in particular become stars of those stories. So I had a lot of favorite moments in those. I thought she did a great job there. Someone asked me on my AMA that I'm doing over on Reddit, favorite planeswalker, and Urza, it's kind of cliched, right? But as a young fantasy fan, seeing someone take the Gandalf figure and make him a little bit corrupt, maybe the wrong term for Urza, right?
I think
that's reasonable.
He was a terrible human being,
right? It's like no one ever takes Dumbledore and points out how dangerous a person Dumbledore really could be.
Mm-hmm.
And magic did that. They went there. Instead of this, being of light and wonder, he was instead this dangerous person who was trying to do something good, but whose motives you're really worried about through the course of the story. And I found him fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, Brandon, that I like about you, not only are you a big fan of Magic as a concept, but you're clearly a really big fan of the game itself. Talk a little bit about how games have influenced you as a writer. I know that a lot of writers play games, RPGs, yeah. Tabletop, Magic. How has that influenced you as a writer? Like, how have you? What kind of influence have games had on your life?
So, yeah, I mean, I would say that you can't separate the game from the Brandon. I was the first generation of writer who grew up playing games, really, right? I had a Nintendo when I was 11. The Final Fantasy games. I got into Magic when I was in high school. The first year it came to Nebraska, where I lived. I didn't see Unlimited or anything like that, but when Revised launched it kind of worldwide, I was there. And I am known mostly for my very kind of rule-based Magic systems in my books. And I think that is an outgrowth of me gaming a lot when I was younger, right? Mm. Growing up with the generation before me, you had a lot of nebulous Magic, which I still think can be really cool and really fun. But you never really know what Gandalf can do. And even something like Earthsea, when Ged does something, it usually is this big dramatic, we don't know what the implications of this will be. It's dangerous to use Magic, right? Mm-hmm. And this was a really cool concept. In 70s fantasy and 60s fantasy, but 80s, 90s fantasy, you start to see people say, well, what if we could harness this? What if it followed the scientific method? If you did something with the magic, it always had this effect. And you may not be able to say why, because, you know, laws of thermodynamics, if you dig too much into it, you know, all sorts of magic look really bad. But if the effects are repeatable, then what does this do? What do you do with society and things like this? And, you know, I think my generation grew up asking, what if you really could just heal someone with a touch, right? What if there are people in every village that could do this? What if you could transmute one material to another? Like, really, what would that do to a society? And those sorts of things are the fun parts of writing to me. And I think you can trace that directly back to playing Magic, to playing Final Fantasy, to gaming a lot when I was younger.
Okay. Now, before I ask you this question, warning, don't give too much away.
Okay.
But in addition to writing this character of Davio, writing this story, you worked with the TCG studio on creating a card for this character, correct?
Well, not really. What okay. I did is I did all the... So they called and said, we want to have concept art for this character.
Sure.
In case we do make a card for them, right? Mm-hmm. And we want to really nail down the visual style, because for Planeswalkers, that's something you guys really need, because you're going to have multiple different illustrators illustrating these cards. And
right.
So you need the look to be consistent. And so I got to go call in on a number of meetings where I explained the character, where I answered questions about the character, and then they commissioned concept art and would send it to me and say, what do you think of this? And it was actually really quite awesome. I didn't expect them to do this, right? I expect them to say, well, we're gonna handle all of that.
Yeah.
And then you take what we give you. And that's not what they wanted to do. They really wanted me to be involved in creating this character from the ground up. And they even said, okay, if this character had mechanics, what kind of mechanics would you see?
Gotcha.
That none of that is a promise that any one thing will appear on a card. I think it's likely we'll get a Davriel card eventually because of all this work they put into it. But one of the things they asked me about a lot is, you know, every Planeswalker card, when we do it, it doesn't necessarily capture every part of a character. So what are the different parts of this character that would be viable as a card? What are the different faces? And I think this was just a way for them to understand the character. It was a great experience.
Very cool.
We talked a little bit about favorite sets already. Mm-hmm. What about getting into those sets and into that sort of nitty-gritty gaming aspect that we just talked about? Do you have a favorite mechanic in Magic?
Oh, wow. All of my favorites tend to be the weird ones that don't come back, but I guess I love Madness, and it came back, so who
sure.
knows? I really liked
Snake
Level
Offering.
Up.
Snake
in,
Offering.
Snake Offering. I really loved Level Up in Rise of the Eldrazi. Yeah, yeah. And I don't think that one's ever coming back, mm-hmm. but I love the concept of of the story, right? I really like sagas for this reason, right? Yeah. I like it when one card tells a story. Things like what is it, Hero of Destiny or Figure of Destiny.
Yeah.
Like the idea of encapsulating an entire story on a card is really cool to me. And Level Up, each of them felt like they had a story to them that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. So I look for those story-based mechanics. Sagas were great for that. I really like sagas in Dominaria.
Okay.
I also really like sagas in Dominaria.
Everybody
those were
sagas in Dominaria.
Those were fun.
Yeah.
They're fun.
So if you wrote another Magic story in the future, where would you want to set it? What would you want to do with it?
If I were to do it, I think the most likely thing to do would be a follow-up to this, just kind of mm-hmm. with the same characters and things like that. If I weren't going to do that, the only other real option I considered just briefly when they said, hey, do you want to do a story? You can do whatever you want. Was to take a character from the Legends expansion from way back when that just didn't have a story for them
sure.
yet. And write them, because Legends is the first expansion set of Magic ever bought.
Okay.
Right after I got into Magic and bought my starter deck of Revised and things like that, Legends came into my game store, which was actually my bookstore also, Cosmic mm-hmm. Comics in Lincoln. It sold fantasy novels, it sold card games, it sold comic books. So what
yeah.
more do you need, right?
Yeah.
And RPG books, right? So I just kind of lived at that store. And when Magic, you know, the new expansion came out, they said, you need to buy whatever you can buy of this right now, as they were unwrapping the box. They said, because this will be gone in an hour.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I, you know, I was a kid, I didn't have any money. So I'm like, all right, I'll buy one pack. That's what I can afford. I bought one pack of Legends.
Yeah.
I got a Chromium, I believe.
Nice.
Nice.
Which was very appropriate with my Esper leanings. Like going back and doing those Legends, that was interesting to me. Part of what made me not do it is I knew, at least I know, I'm pretty sure that a lot of those Legends were based off of RPG games that the people, you know, their own games. So those characters, even if they don't have official Magic stories, they already have stories to them. Mm-hmm. They're somebody's characters. And I wouldn't necessarily want to do that unless I could get in touch with the person who came up with that character and say, who is this character?
Yeah.
So I can stay true to your vision, which sounded like more work than perhaps it might have been worth. I don't know.
Yeah.
Before we move on to fan questions, there was one in here that I meant to ask you about, but I haven't yet. That art piece behind you, someone asked if it was a Phyrexian mountain. I know for a fact that it's not. But
no.
that's a really great piece by Steve Argyle, right?
It is. Yeah, I met Steve Argyle, who's an artist for various Magic cards, at the airport. We were both flying to a convention, and I went into the bookstore in the airport to sign books. And he and his wife, Kat, were back there browsing for fantasy novels to read. And it just came out that, you know, I write books and he does Magic cards, which was really cool. And so he lives like up the street from me, literally. It's like
oh, wow.
two blocks away. He's part of the people I mentioned that love Commander that I draft with a lot are Steve and Kat. We became pretty good friends. We ended up, you know, collaborating on various art pieces and things like that. I use him all the time for art. This is the end pages for the Mistborn Leatherbound we commissioned from Steve. So I'm a big fan of Steve Argyle. We often, if we're at conventions nowadays together, we'll play two-headed giant games against fans. So you might be able to get Brandon and Steve to play against you at some point if you meet us at the right convention.
I can hear a lot of fans rubbing their hands.
Yeah, seriously.
Right now, yeah.
well, it sounds like we have some time. We have a lot of viewer questions.
Great, let's get
to them. That are interested in talking to Brandon. So, here's one from Lasco the King. For Brandon, what was the coolest part about getting to write for Magic?
I would say the coolest part was that moment where I realized they were going to let me design a planeswalker from the ground up. And that, you know, it's a little bit like one of those, I've heard writers who get to write for Marvel and they say, design us a new superhero, write for the Marvel universe or something like this. Like one of those pure joy moments where you realize something you're doing is entering the canon. And even if it doesn't have a big part, you've done something that is now part of the lore. Mm-hmm. That moment was really special to me. And I know we're all hopeful that, you know, in the coming years, we'll get some big magic cinematic universe and things like this. The fact that maybe someday I can go to one of those movies and see a Gavriel King cameo, right, is just super exciting to me. But the idea that there might be cards, right, that I can put in my cubes that are the character I designed, that tickles me to no end.
Yeah, or not even just the character card, but, like, there'll be flavor text maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
The Davriel cube.
Davriel. Yeah.
Oath of Davriel, maybe? Maybe not.
Maybe. There's a question that I think is somewhat facetious from somebody named Doomsy. They ask, can we direct challenge Brandon in Magic the Gathering Arena?
You know, I see this being possible in the future.
Okay, all right.
I don't play a lot of Arena or MTGO. I like them. I think they're a lot of fun. But I spend so much time by myself with my computer that when I play Magic, I usually want to get out of the house and go hang out with friends because my job is so solitary. I don't look for video games as something else to do just on my computer. I look for games that, like, when I play video games, it's things I can play with my kids. We're doing Stardew Valley right now with the co-op and stuff like that. We did Terraria before that. Arena is a lot of fun. And I can see myself wasting way too much time on Arena in the coming years. So if I ever am doing it more than I am now, I'll let people know. They can challenge me, sure.
Cool.
I'll have to come up with some themed deck that's appropriately bad that they can appreciate the thought behind it. I'm kind of a Johnny, so decks that don't do anything but kind of you can imagine them finally doing something. Those are the things that I'm
the
really...
1 in 20 games where you finally do it. You're like, yes,
I can build a new deck.
I did the
now.
Thing. It made those other 19 games worth it.
Still the Water asks, is Crowstorm still viable in your cube?
You know what? I had to take Crowstorm out. It just turned out, I liked it. I loved the concept. It was fun. But Empty the Warrens is already a little sketchy, right? As a win con for Storm. And I found that Crowstorm was just a slightly sketchier Empty the Warrens. You really need to win the turn you go off with Storm. I've spent too many a game being on 2 life as I've been setting up Storm and then, you know, summoning even, you know, 20 goblins and then like, all right, you know, we'll wrath and then kill you. I eventually took it out. I slipped it into, I have this thing I call a mini cube. And the mini cube is all my favorite unset cards mixed with a lot of conspiracies. And the idea is if you want to spice up a format, you add 2 cards from this to a pack that you open of a regular set. And it just kind of it's a way to take a regular set that we've drafted 2 or 3 times and do something different with it. Crowstorm went into that. I don't know if it will ever be able to be done. Be used, but that's a lot of fun, and it lets it live on in perhaps some way for the future.
As the resident silver bordered enthusiast of Weekly MTG, I appreciate that very much. Larsent asks, what are Tassenda's colors? Is she BG, BW? What do you see as her color identity?
So I started with Tassenda as wanting to do a mono red character whose red aspect manifests through music. Mm-hmm. Something that I see magic designers talking about, wishing they could do more, but the card game is based so much around combat that it's hard to express things other than, you know, natural combat emotions. And I thought, well, if I'm writing a story, I don't have to, you know, I don't have the same constraints. The problem is a lot of her motivations were green-white, which is a very natural Innistrad human sort of motivation. And she came out as with the green kind of being dominant in her personality as I actually wrote the story. So I would say she's dominant green with a secondary white and red. So she's Naya, but if you were going to make a card monocolor, you would probably make her green. Same way with Davriel, that I would say he is black if you're going to make one card, but he's really Dimir if you're going to go multiple colors.
Yep.
I'm not surprised that Davriel's Dimir, given your own preferences. There is another question about Tassenda. What led you to use music for Tassenda's magic?
This was really me wanting to do music as a manifestation of the creativity of red. Red is one of those colors that, like I said, when you play the game, it tends to feel a little more one-sided because there are certain things red can do when you're working with the mechanics of a combat system. And it feels like red is the color that has the biggest difference between its effect on the lives of the people and its representation in the game, right? Most of the other colors, those things are very similar, but with red, you know, the red-aligned characters that you meet in the village are all going to be characters that wouldn't represent very well in a card, because there'll be people who have, you know, a loving family life. There'll be people who are into music and art. There'll be people who are, you know, that don't do well they're not characters you're going to make a card game about. You know, the villager who has a nice, stable family life and loves their family just doesn't end up in stories, right? And so I wanted to take that music side and give a magical component to her music that manifests, so that if she ever were using the card, that you couldn't ignore the red side of her. And that's where that came from. And by making having her weird curse, right? For those who haven't read the story, she is blind during the days and can see at night. And this grew out of the, you know, Innistrad. You got to have curses, right?
Of course.
I was brainstorming things I needed to have if I were going to be an Innistrad, and curses was top of the list. And I wanted an interesting curse, and I thought somebody who was like that, that music might be a refuge for her during the days when her sight left her.
Very cool. Very cool. We have a question about the type of commander decks you play. Do you still enjoy playing Zedru?
I do. Zedru is one of my go-to, which Zedru is not Dimir, so that is an oddity for me. You'll also find me playing any sort of Dimir clone deck. So Lazav, both versions of him, I have I've used as commander. I really like the kind of copy, clone, destroy, evil twin as the theme for a deck. So yeah, what else do I have? Anything that works in a weird Johnny way, you will see me trying to build. I did build an Experiment Crash deck at one point, right? And I built, this is Esper, right? Marie-Curie Bredet? I can't say her name.
Yep.
She's the steal your dude commander from original Legends, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was.
Back in the day.
Esper colors.
Was my first commander deck that I ever built on my own, what was with her.
Gotcha.
We have a question from YR Siegel. You said that you like the idea of a non-traditional hero like black or black blue. What did you think of the Aetherborn as a species?
I love them. I loved Kaladesh all around. I actually, for those who follow, I now have a fully built all foil Kaladesh set cube.
Wow.
because I traded for a bunch of cards and things like that. The Aetherborn are exactly what I love to see in Magic, where the designers say, let's take a different side of a color. And it's very Brandon-y, right? An entire race that's built around the ecosystem that only can exist on this fantasy world that couldn't exist in our world. Mm-hmm. It gave me one of my favorite short stories ever. If you guys haven't read it, it's by Ray Bradbury. It's called, I think, Frost and Fire. It's a story about a world where people only live 7 days. Mm. And maybe my favorite short story of all time. And the Aetherborn kind of gave me that same vibe, the short life span sort of thing. So, yeah.
We've got a question that is, so after Urza, other than Urza, what is your favorite Planeswalker?
Recently I felt that the way the team did Jaya was really cool. And I'd say of recent years, she's my favorite, just because, again, it's not what you normally see. Coming back to the character years later, and you don't see fantasy is one of these things that tends to ignore mature characters of either gender, but particularly mature women. Mm-hmm. And having her, she worked really well for me. On sole visual design alone, Ashiok is probably my favorite.
Yep.
They are just a really interesting character with not a lot of lore to them, but great visual design. The sort of mechanic that I really love. If you can't tell from the way that Davriel works, stealing somebody else's stuff and doing cool things with it is kind of my jam. And Ashiok is right in that wheelhouse. Doesn't do the same sort of standard stuff that most planeswalkers do. But you will see me draft to Ashiok at any point if they come along in my power cube. I'm like, well, whatever I was doing, now I'm doing Ashiok.
It's really interesting you say that because Ashiok's only had one card,
yeah,
and has only been in one set. But I believe so. We had a gallery,
show at Gallery 1988 in Los Angeles.
Ashiok was, I think, the most popular character that the artists chose to create art.
That's correct. There were some really, really cool Ashiok pieces in that gallery show. But yes, very, very popular planeswalker from a visual perspective, certainly. Mm-hmm. And I know that people, as Brandon mentioned, enjoy taking other people's stuff and doing cool things with it.
Yeah, that card's actually just busted.
Yeah, it's busted. Yeah. here's a good one. From Pinball Witch, Brandon, what's your favorite Theros god?
I built the Commander Cube, I put all the Theros gods in. Mm-hmm. I got a little help from folks at Wizards to get me the ones that I didn't have. Which is my favorite? Am I gonna say it right? What's the Athros?
Athreos, God of Passage.
Athreos, God of Passage. Yeah.
We opened an. How do you say it? Athros?
I think it's Athreos.
I don't.
We'll have to ask somebody in the building. Apologies.
This is a common experience with talking about your favorite fantasy things. We have this whenever we talk about books.
Yeah.
You start pronouncing a character's name, and they're like, who? I pronounce them like this.
Yep.
All of my Wheel of Time fans, friends growing up, we all pronounce the names all differently. Mm-hmm. Now I have to do them right because I worked on it.
But, right, exactly.
For years, it was just like, this is how I say the character's name. The mechanics were cool. I really liked the way all the gods of the dead and the undead were treated on Theros. I really like the whole mask thing, the losing your memory. I really like the reprint of Thoughtseize as a on-world flavor reprint that was so cool. I really like the main Erebos, the main god of the dead. And just the kind of, again, in that story, the white character, White Aligned, was the villain, right? Mm-hmm. The god of death had a really interesting story to them. So, yeah, there you go.
Good one. I like it. Have you taught any of your kids how to play Magic?
I have. My 11-year-old plays Magic. We're planning we have a box of Battle Bond that I saved for the holidays that we're going to do a fathers and sons or fathers and daughters draft with my friends. And so he's really excited for that. And I'm getting him to play Arena because it's a little easier for him. Mm-hmm. Because, particularly learning when the mechanics, when you can't do things wrong, it really helps. He asked me when he was young, what is the strongest card in Magic? I couldn't really answer that, but I'm like, well, here are some of the biggest. And he just latched onto Blightsteel Colossus as like his thing, right?
Sure.
He was 8, and so you just want the biggest, coolest thing.
Yeah.
So he has a deck he can play against almost nobody because it's a vintage deck, right? A Tinker Blightsteel.
Tinker Blightsteel.
Your 11-year-old has a Tinker Blightsteel.
Wow.
Blightsteel.
I did put the
Power 9 in him. He's 11, but it is a Tinker, because otherwise he can never play as Blightsteel. So
he only gets Mox Diamonds.
Yeah, only Mox Diamonds.
Mox Diamonds and Lotus Petals, kid.
Yep.
Oh, wait till you grow up for real Moxes.
Tinker Blightsteel. I've seen that happen in Cube more often than I'd care to admit, mm-hmm. and it feels so good when you're the one doing it.
Yep.
And so bad when you're the one that it's
getting
done to.
You just look at all your
cards
and you're like, I can't do anything.
I can't do anything. Tinker Blightsteel is a pretty good deck for an 11-year-old. That's really impressive. Here's a question from Fantrocity. What is your favorite dumb gimmick combo?
Dumb gimmick combo. Okay. Yeah. So I read about a thread on Magic the Gathering subreddit once that had my favorite deck concept of all time.
Okay.
And this deck concept was a Battle of Wits deck that only played a 60-card deck. And the idea was you needed to use Spawnsire of Ulamog, which allows you to get it has kind of an ultimate ability to grab any number of Eldrazi cards you know from outside the game. Obviously, this is a casual deck.
Yeah.
But the idea was to grab 200 copies of Emrakul, and would then all go into play and all kill each other from Legend Rule. Go to your graveyard, reshuffle your library so you had 250 cards in your library, and win with Battle Wits, right?
Sure.
I've never heard of a deck cooler than that concept in my entire life.
I kind of want to play that now. Yeah. That sounds so great.
Against who?
Yeah, exactly. Like, who would play that? Tinker Blightsteel, obviously.
You just reach in your bag. You're like, I have 200 Emrakuls. 200
copies of Emrakul.
From outside of the game.
In my Commander Cube, I do have Battle of Wits, and it comes with a little emblem that said that it comes with a Momir Vig emblem from Modo. Mm. So you get Battle of Wits and 200 and something basic lands, and you play Momir Basic with one of the apps that'll give you a random card against your opponent playing a normal deck. And it's a lot of fun play Momir Basic with a Battle of Wits somewhere in your deck.
That sounds crazy. Question from Mandalore 209. Did you get anything Magic related when you went to Alaska?
I did not get anything Magic related when I went to Alaska. I should have. I'm trying to remember. On that tour, someone did give me a pack of cards. Sometimes this happens. And then I have the fans sign one. I don't think it was in Alaska, but if it was you and someone in Alaska, you gave it to me, then I apologize for misremembering.
It's a really leading question. Did you get something in Alaska?
Did you get something in Alaska? Do you remember that?
From Alaskan 3493.
That speaks a different language that has Magic in the language. I usually buy a pack just so I have some sort of souvenir. But you know, Alaska may feel like a different country, but it is actually ours. And when I'm on tour, I do not get a lot of time to do anything other than go to the bookstore and then back to the hotel. Mm-hmm. My signings these days usually last around 6 hours. They can go as long as 8. And so I fly into town, I go to the bookstore, I sign from 7 o'clock until 1 or 2 a.m. a lot of nights, and then I go back to the hotel. I crash, I get up the next day, I fly to another bookstore. So not a lot of time to see the sights when I'm on tour.
It's really great that you were able to not only be on tour, but also, I believe, finish up this novella for Magic. I mean, I know that you were on tour for your book really recently, so on behalf of me and all of the fans, thank you so much for all of your hard work. Last question from the Twitch chat. We have a question about, I think I know the answer to this, but what is your favorite shard in Shards of Alara?
Esper, yeah. Obviously. Though, I will say, I have a soft spot for Bant, because I think Bant was designed really well. It's visually very interesting. It kind of evokes that knights thing that you can see in my Stormlight Archive. I have a thing for knights in ridiculous armor. And I really like the concept of no armor on your back, because who would hit you in your back? and the what are those things called? The big lions they ride around on?
Yeah, I forget what they're called, but yeah.
Yeah, they're really cool.
Leon 2 or something like that.
Leotaus.
Yeah, there you go, Leotaus. Yeah. Are visually really cool. Kind of mixing a big Destrian horse, you know, with the big hooves like a Clydesdale with a lion, turned out to be visually one of those cool fantasy images that I wish I'd come up with. Like, that's the one of the things I point to the Magic and say, man, I should have thought of that. That is really cool.
Well, I'm also a big fan of Bant.
Us Noble Hierarch.
It's my favorite shard.
Yeah.
Roxwar Monk. Roxwar Monk on turn 3.
Roxwar Monk.
Come on.
Or on turn 2 with the Noble Hierarch.
Yeah, or that. that's going to do it for fan questions. Brandon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you,
really
Brandon. It was great talking to you.
And once again, Children of the Nameless by Brandon Sanderson, available for free as an EPUB or PDF for download on mtgstory.com. Brandon Sanderson, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah. All right. Well, please go to mtgstory.com, download the book. Let us know what you think. And if you'd like to see Brandon come back, hopefully we'll be able to have him back again to write another magic story. That's my hope, personally. That's going to do it for us this week on Weekly MTG. Head over to mtgstory.com once again to download it. Yep. I'm off next week, but Blake is going to be back.
I will be here.
Yep.
We'll just be doing, we'll be playing some Arena and doing an AMA. So literally any questions you have about Magic the Gathering, you can send them to me on Twitter or on Twitch chat next Thursday, and we'll just answer mostly anything that you ask.
Brandon, if you want to ask him questions too, you should tweet at Blake.
And will do.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, everyone.